Marissa asked me to talk about environmental ethics in relation to conservation, which kind of got me thinking because it's kind of an odd request. So I thought I would start off with kind of what is environmental ethics all about? You know, what is an environmental ethicist trying to do? Okay. You know, I love when Patricia talks about how patterns and looking at the land and studying it. We're not so interested in studying the particularities of the land, but rather studying the particularities about our thinking about the land. And conservation, I think, is obviously a good thing, okay? I mean, maybe it should be preservation, maybe it should be conservation, but I don't think any environmental ethicist that I've ever read says we shouldn't be conserving in the broad sense, okay? So the question that I think environmental ethicists ask is, why should we be conserving? What are the reasons that we would give for that, okay? Environmental ethics has not been around for very long. If you went 50 years ago and started looking in school catalogs, you wouldn't find courses on environmental ethics. It just didn't really exist. And a lot of the applied ethics didn't really exist. Not that people didn't think about them, because they certainly did. I just edited a book last year called St. Augustine and the Environment. And so St. Augustine, you can pull out stuff about what St. Augustine thought about the environment, but he certainly didn't think he was doing environmental ethics, okay? So, and I think the big question that we tend to ask environmental ethics is that why? Why do we want to conserve? Why is that a good thing? Why should we? Okay? And that gets us into what philosophers call value theory and a distinction that we make between what you could use the words intrinsic versus instrumental values, okay? And an intrinsic value is something that's valuable because of what it is. And an instrumental value is something that's valuable because of what it does for us, okay? So when we apply that to conservation, we get, well, why should we conserve? Should we conserve because it does something for us? Maybe we need it. You might need diversity or biodiversity because, I mean, maybe there's still things to discover in there or medicines to create. Maybe there's money involved in it, and that's an instrumental value as well, okay, what we would get out of it. And we're not putting that down, okay, but we're wondering, and a lot of environmentalists really seriously wonder this, whether there is some intrinsic value in nature, whether we owe something to nature because of what nature is, okay? What it's, I mean, what, it's harder to say much more than that because it's kind of a basic idea, right? Does nature, respect for nature, mean that we would value nature even if it didn't make us any money or brought us any more medicines or made us happier if we really didn't get anything out of hiking, okay? Back to my notes. So conservation, I guess it's not really a environmental ethics to conservation. Conservation isn't as an issue, but it's an issue that way, okay? When we ask, why do we want to do that? And so you can kind of get into different kinds of environmental ethicists, okay? So this sort of came up, and I don't know if I like the language, but you kind of divide it into its anthropocentric and its non-anthropocentric strains, okay? All of these people are still caring about the environment. They want, they think there should be an environmental ethic. They're trying to work on trying to articulate that because, again, it's a new field, so there may not be, you know, where do I find the environmental ethics? So people are trying to add to that. So it can, you know, some of my students kind of get into this. If you're anthropocentric, it kind of becomes a negative word, a kind of a put down. You know, that's just anthropocentric. And I try to say, no, don't think about that way, because those anthropocentric people are, they care just as much about the environment as someone who isn't. Right? But what they think is that it's got to be some sort of a human reason. Okay, it's got to come down to something that we get out of it. Okay, versus the non-anthropocentric people who would think that, no, there's something, we value nature for something about it. And again, I always think, even if we didn't get anything out of it, it's still a worthwhile thing to value. Even if there was no money, or there was little money in conserving, we should do it anyway. So thinking about different sort of people, you get kind of two strains here, okay? You get what you might call traditional strains, okay? So Peter Singer is what I would call a traditionalist, because he thinks he's against biodiversity, and we all know that, but he's also in favor of respecting animals and trees to some extent, okay? He tries to apply what people call traditional ethical views of looking at things to the environment, okay? And that's one of the places where other environmental ethicists stop, because they want something brand new, okay? So compare Peter Singer, who would talk about animals, at least, as being very similar to us and having similar sorts of needs. So he's going to stress their similarity, okay? So they feel pain. They then would have interests that we should at least take into consideration when we act, okay? Get to a deep ecologist, okay? So someone who sometimes described as a radical ecotheorist, okay? Because they propose looking at things very, very differently, okay? So the deep ecologists say there's something really wrong about the entire way we do things, in philosophy at least, and the way we think about things. And we need a brand new way of looking at things. So here's how I read someplace, and I think this is a good way to understand it. So the deep ecologist might say, well, you should wander around and you should look at things and you should wonder, you know, why things are the way they are. Why are we destroying things the way we do? So, you know, one example might be, okay, there's a smokestack and it's polluting things. And well, why do we have smokestacks? Okay. And then a traditional way might then sort of talk about, okay, so what are the costs and the benefits of smokestacks? What do we get out of them? What could we give up for them? How much do human interests created by smokestacks balance against animal interests, natural interests? Okay. The deep ecologist would suggest instead of doing that, you should actually stop yourself and stop looking at it that way totally. Look at that from a totally non-anthropocentric perspective. Okay, why do we even need a smokestack? Okay, this is a step along the way, because what the deep ecologist wants this to actually end up with is thinking more about yourself and your relationship. Okay, now this is where deep ecologists and I sort of part ways, because they can get very mystical and they want to talk about religious and spiritual ways of being a person, being alive, okay? So sometimes they even talk about oneness, okay? But where I take it is I think it gets very interesting when you start thinking about that in terms of your own character, okay? So this is taking an example from another philosopher who wrote an article where the first question of the article is, what kind of a person would pave their entire yard so that they didn't have to mow the lawn anymore? Okay? And I take that back. What kind of a person, what kind of a being builds a smokestack? Okay? So it's a character question. Okay? What kind of characters, what kind of character traits do we need to develop so that we can be more holistic, if you want, so that everything can get a piece of this, okay? And I'm bringing this up because of the, David Trainer was at Carroll about 2 years ago. He came and gave a talk, and he has a very interesting theory, okay? Because he says, when you think about character traits, okay, what you're thinking about is how you can live in a certain way that you can make your life better. Okay, and he says, of course, that's individually and socially. Okay, so what sort of things can you do so that you can live better as an individual? What sort of traits should you develop? And so things that come to my mind would be things like courage. So you can face your fears and not let them run your life. And temperance or self-control so that your desires for various things don't take over in your life. And so that seems obvious to me that people that have those traits, I mean, it doesn't answer all your questions, but it does kind of set you up to succeed at the sorts of things you want to do. Okay. What sort of traits would it be good to develop if you wanted to succeed at being a social person? Okay, to get along better with people and to work together with other people. And certainly, I hope some things come to your mind. So one, you know, an example might be courtesy. Okay, courtesy is kind of that grease that, you know, greases the wheels of social interaction, right? People are often much more pleasant and much happier if you're basically a courteous person. And things just go better, okay? Benevolence. Seems kind of weird to have benevolence as an individual virtue. I mean, we don't really have to be convinced to be benevolent to ourselves, right? But we have to work at being benevolent to others, at knowing what their needs are and how I can meet those without necessarily undermining my own needs, okay? Now, that seems kind of very traditional ethics, okay? And virtue is a very traditional ethical way of looking at things. That's the way Aristotle looked at it. Okay, so what David Treanor suggests is that, and this was a little bit of an eye-opener to me, we can ask that in terms of a third thing, the environment. So what kind of values, character traits should we develop so that our environmental lives would work better, would succeed? Okay? There's a book, and I've forgotten the name of the person who wrote it, but it's called The Dirty Virtues. Okay, now before you get going, this is not what it sounds like. What this person did, it was a Danish woman. She read environmental literature. So she read John Muir and Pinochet and Aldo Leopold. And what she wanted to do is she wanted to read them for the character traits that they were recommending people develop. And she found, 189 dirty virtues. Amazing. Okay, so she found things like sustainability, which you might think of as a process, but you can also think of it as a trait. You can become a sustainable person. You want to do things that can be sustained, okay? Benevolence can also be applied towards the environment. We can be benevolent to other people. We can be benevolent to the environment, okay? And so, you got 189, okay? So there are traits that we can develop that make us a better person and make us better able to live in the environment. Okay. Now, the interesting thing about all of this is he says, okay, well, what we need to do then, since we don't have a lot of time in our lives, we need to develop kind of the virtues that give the biggest bang for the buck. Okay, so what David Treanor was thinking is, okay, let's see if we can look at all the constellation of these virtues. And he actually wrote this up kind of like a, you know, you ever heard of a Venn diagram where you have these intersecting circles, okay? And so you got the individual circle here and you have all the virtues there and then you got social circle there. And then you would have virtues that are both beneficial for your individual life and your social life. So they would be at that intersection point. Okay, and then you got the environmental circle and you got your 189 virtues there. Okay, so get a hold of that book, Dirty Virtues, if you want to find out those. Put that up there, and then what we would be most interested in then, if we're trying to be as ethical as we can be, is those virtues, and I hope you're imagining this right, that would be at that intersection point of those three circles. Okay, so I like this because it sounds very like empirical, right? You list them, you know, those look like virtues, yeah, you know, self-control, yeah, that seems to be a virtue there. And you'll see, you can be relatively sure about a lot of these because some of them sort of make sense. You just think about what you need to do. And then which ones would be there? Okay, well, I'm going to leave that partly up to you as a research project to think about, okay? But one of the ones that David Treanor says is going to be there is, and this is, it just made perfect sense of a whole many other things I've read. Simplicity. Simplicity. The virtue of the kiss virtue, right? Mm-hmm. Keep it simple. Okay? Live, a lot of the deep ecologists say live simply so that others may simply live. Everybody's heard that, right? What the heck does that mean? But here's a kind of a verification of that. That's, you know, developing the virtue of simplicity is something that would have effects in your life, both individually, socially, and environmentally. Okay, so now we're kind of poised, okay? So, because this is where it does stop being so theoretical and starts to become a little more practical. Okay, because that's something that now you can go, how can I, me, you, live simply? I mean, it's going to look different for each of us, right? So, but it's something now to focus on. I want to become a better person, maybe a more ethical person. I want the environment to be part of that thinking process, okay? Simplicity would be a very good way to make those effects, okay? Simplify your life. And I know this can take, it doesn't have to be one thing. It can take very different ways of being simple. Okay, and baby steps first, always. Just baby steps. You know, one thing to do for the next few months. And I always tell my students, nobody becomes virtuous by accident. Okay, and since virtue is about succeeding at life, nobody succeeds at life by accident. Okay, so all the people that we look up to that have done well, that we think are great moral heroes, they didn't get there by accident. They got there by a lot of hard work that they put their minds to. And I mean, we tend to be fooled. We think sometimes it's going to be easy, but it's not. But it's done bit by bit, okay? So just as a kind of an example of that, I love this example because I think this example is kind of weird. Benjamin Franklin, he was a weird guy, if you read about him. But he wrote about autobiography once, and he sat down when he was very young, and he said, he decided, if I'm going to succeed at life, I need to become a certain kind of person, so I need to develop virtues. So what he did one day is he actually wrote out 12 virtues that he thought he would need to have to succeed at the things that he wanted to do and was doing in his life. Okay, and then when he got done, and so you see things. I don't know if simplicity was on that list right now. There's kind of the traditional sort of things you would see, generosity and that sort of thing. And then he set that up as a life's project. So let's start at the top of the list. Number one, that's courage. Okay, and then he says, so what can I do so I can become a little more courageous? And wrote it down two or three things. And then he went through life, and every night he would check himself. Okay, so for me, the first thing would have been, did I do any of it? Because I'm going to forget. Okay, did I do any of it? So after a couple days of that, then I'm kind of I need to be doing it. Okay, so now what's the first thing? Okay, and find little everyday things. And then after a few months, when he decided that he'd gotten a little better at that, okay, check, go on to number two. And then it was very much a lather, rinse, and repeat thing. Get through the list and then go back to the top, because it's not that you've ceased to be that, but now I can take that a little further. Now, I don't know if he did this all his life, but to me it's amazing, first of all, because he's a very secular guy. We don't think of him as a saint or anything like that, but he did think that being moral was very important, and he did think you needed to work at it, and you needed to be systematic, and you needed to keep at it. And I hope he did keep at it all his life. Okay? And so maybe that's the first thing to put on your list. Simplicity, and you've got a research project. What other sorts of virtues might intersect there, okay? And getting back to the other point, it kind of then, the question about whether nature is intrinsic value, has intrinsic value or not, kind of drops out of that, okay? Because the importance is that it has value, okay? And I'm making that value a part of my life through a virtue, which is what I like about virtues, okay? It's real, okay? I think it's worth a good question to ask whether it has intrinsic value, but, you do kind of get into, that's a lot of things that, you should take my class. That's a lot of things that we do talk about, the difficult sorts of things. So I guess I'll stop there. I kind of merged a couple things together, but leave you with a little bit of a jumping off point, something to do.